Hello and welcome to a special episode of Fireside Chats with Danny Inney, where we're going to be interviewing one of the most well-known and prolific writers and marketers working today, Guy Kawasaki. We've noticed how many readers and listeners are interested in writing a book, or who've written one and need to get it out there. With all of the changes in the publishing industry, more and more people are turning to self-publishing, just like Guy has. It's not enough to be a great author anymore, now you also have to be an entrepreneur and a publisher too. So Danny and Guy are going to be talking about what really goes into self-publishing a popular book. Guy uses his newest book, APE, Author, Publisher, Entrepreneur, to explain what steps are absolutely necessary when embarking on a self-publishing journey. And you'll get a whole bunch of tips on how to write, edit, format, crowdsource, and even publish your own book. So without further ado, I give you Danny Inney and Guy Kawasaki.
So Guy, thanks for joining us on the call. I want to hear about the Ape story, but I know it actually starts with your last book, What the Plus. So maybe let's start with that. I know that you'd published about 10 really great books through major publishers before that. And then all of a sudden you went the self-published route for What the Plus. What happened there?
Yeah, no, it's one of these situations of frustration. So my last traditionally published book was a book called Enchantment. And I got an order for 500 copies of the ebook version, and my publisher was unable or unwilling to fill it because they had to sell through resellers. So the first stop the company goes to in order to buy these 500 books was Apple. And Apple tells a person to buy 500 gift cards, get them, and scrape off the back to get the promo code. So that isn't going to work. So then she tries Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And basically, she ended up having to buy 500 promo codes one at a time on her credit card. And so I was just amazed that, you know, that's where the state of the art was in publishing. And around the same time, I fell in love with Google Plus. And so I decided to write a book about Google Plus. And I knew that was kind of a niche market. So I thought, well, you know, if there's ever a time to write and then publish your own book, this is it. So I decided to self-publish What the Plus, the book about Google Plus. And in that process, I discovered how difficult it is to self-publish a book. It may be very easy for a novelist, but if you're a nonfiction writer and you have things like pictures, captions, lists, bulleted lists, tables, it is a non-trivial task to get from Word to EPUB and MOBI and PDF. And so the pain I experienced, I decided I would try to spare other people from having to go through.
Okay, and so that led to Ape, but I know that Ape is, you know, Ape is a lot more than just being about, you know, the technology of how to take your nicely formatted Word document with bullets and images and all that and turn it into a Kindle book. So let's maybe start with, you know, what is an Ape? Where did that name come from?
Well, I love tricolons, you know, like I came, I saw, I conquered. And so what I decided was that there were three stages to publishing. First, you have to write the book, and then you have to publish it, you know, produce it. And then the hard part really begins is when you have to market and sell it and, you know, do the publicity for it. So you have to basically be an entrepreneur with your book and not simply throw it over to your publisher and pray for the best results. And so I had to come up with a tricolon, and A for author was clear, P for publisher was clear, and then E I struggled with a little bit. I thought of entrepreneuring, I thought of evangelist too. But then I thought, you know, too many people already know me for evangelism. They're going to think that this is just warmed over, you know, previous book. So that's how I came up with Ape, and it's early in the alphabet. It's easy to make it into a verb, so it fit all the sort of marketing requirements for a name.
Yeah, and I love the visual on the cover. You've got that ape kind of, you know, destroying the New York skyline where all the big publishers live.
Yep, that's it.
A much-needed comeuppance. But let's talk through each of these three components of the book. So the first is author. That's the A in Ape. That's about the actual act of writing the book. So tell us about that.
Yes. So it all starts with writing a great book. In fact, I go even before that, and I ask people to examine their motivation for why they're writing a book. And I think many people do it because they think they're going to make a lot of money or it's going to help their speaking career or their consulting career. And to me, a book is an end in and of itself. It is not necessarily a means to an end. It's a piece of art. And so I talk about the good reasons to write a book, such as you have something to say that people will find valuable. that it's on your bucket list as an intellectual challenge, or you want to spread a set of ideas or a cause. And those are what I consider the three best reasons to write a book. So it starts there. And then I go through the process of, you know, writing what it's like to write, how people have this concept that you're sitting on a windswept beach and the words flow out your hand through your fountain pen, an 18-karat gold nib fountain pen on parchment. And
if only, right?
I try to destroy the myth of that's what it's like to write a book. So I think the best metaphor for writing a book, it has been attributed to several people, but the metaphor overall is that you open up a vein and you pour your blood onto a page. I have a slightly more gross analogy for writing.
To me, more gross than that?
Yeah, more gross than that. To me, writing is the process of vomiting. So you're retching and you're vomiting and, you know, your entire body is tremoring and you spew out your book and you try to do it as fast as possible. And then you spend the next 6 to 9 months refining your vomit, if you will. And you're picking out the large undigested chunks of food to get to something that's beautiful. And so if you can wrap your mind around either giving blood out of your veins or vomiting in a very violent way your book, I think those are accurate representations of what it takes.
I might suggest that a less gruesome metaphor might be useful for kind of past the middle stage, but I actually think the idea of vomiting is a good, you know, you just got to get it out there. It's not going to be art in your first draft, and, you know, just try to get that first draft done and work from there. I think that's actually really good advice, and gross as it is.
Well, I believe it or not, I have we may go into the territory of TMI here, but I have this disease called Meniere's. And it's an inner ear disease, and it has three symptoms, hearing loss, tinnitus, which is a ringing in your ear, and sporadic attacks of vertigo. And when you get vertigo, you often are on the ground, you know, you cannot maintain balance at all, and you're throwing up. So I know all about vomiting.
Okay, but so you've vomited all this information onto the page, and then, you know, it's transformed into something a little less gross before you massage it into something that is, you know, really a work of art. And you've finally completed this manuscript, whether it's for a fiction book, a nonfiction book, whatever it is that you've been dying and eager to write. And then you've got your manuscript, which is done. And so after the author part, you go to the publisher. You know, this is my favorite part of the process, to a certain extent at least, because we get to cut those, you know, big, ridiculous publishing houses that want you to buy 500 e-books one at a time. It's not even physical books that they're shipping. It's ridiculous. So you cut them out of the process, and now you're totally preaching to the self-publishing choir with me, but talk through your rationale for our listeners.
Well, the rationale for your listeners, really, not just the P part, but really the A, the P, and the E part, is that self-publishing is a craft. And it's like artisanal brewing or artisanal winemaking. And if you think about the artisanal winemaker, the artisanal brewer, the artisanal baker, they're controlling the coffee beans, they're controlling the flour, they're controlling the grapes. You know, they're stepping on the grapes themselves, they're kneading the dough themselves, they're packaging their bread, they're packaging their wine, they're doing everything. And I tell you, that is a great sense of accomplishment because you truly feel like you're in control of the entire process. That is good news, bad news. The good news is you are in control, whereas with traditional publishers, you are not in control. You know, someone is telling you what to put in the book. Someone is telling you what the cover should look like. Someone is telling you what the book should look like on the inside. Someone is telling you how to market the book. Whereas in self-publishing, you control all that, but it also means you have the responsibility for all of that too.
And so what do people need to know in order to do it well? I mean, there's all these things that historically the big publishers would just do for the author. The author doesn't have to worry about it. He hands over like a manuscript and you know, it magically turns into books on shelves. And they only arguably do a good job at it. And I really do agree with you that in the vast majority of cases, it's smarter business and smarter publishing to leave them out of the process. But as the author who never thought he'd have to do all this stuff, What are the things you've got to keep in mind to not get kind of entrapped by the roots along the path along the way?
Well, there's actually an entire chapter in APE about how to avoid the self-published look, which is kind of what you're asking. So from beginning to end, all the processes that are done in traditional publishing have to be done in self-publishing. So it's not like if you went to self-publishing, you can skip steps. So the same thing has to occur. You know, the book has to be written. It has to have content editing. It has to have copy editing. It has to have interior design, cover design, you know, publicist. Everything has to happen. And so the key, though, is who's responsible for it and the fact that now you are in control, but it still has to happen. And one of the most important steps of all is copy editing. I think one of the most telling ways that a book is not really up to standards of, you know, traditional publishing standards is poor copy editing. The second most obvious signal that it's not up to par is the cover design. And one of the recommendations of APE is that at the very least, you need to hire a professional copy editor and a professional cover designer. Everything else you can sort of scrimp and save and, you know, cheat your way around. But wow, that $2,000 you'd have to spend for copy editing and cover design, that's the last $2,000 you should try to save.
Yeah, and it's $2,000 that, you know, trying to save by going to a traditional publisher, it doesn't make any sense at all.
No. Well, and you know, it's kind of a myth to think that people think that they have the option, you know, so they're sitting there and saying, well, you know, I got this $2 million advance from Penguin, or I can self-publish. You know, what do you think I should do? That kind of hypothetical choice between publishing and self-publishing never occurs, okay? So, you know, you may sit there and want to have an intellectual discussion probably with yourself, well, should I go with traditional publishing or should I go with self-publishing? But the truth is, for 99.9999% of the people, you don't have the option of traditional publishing and the large lucrative advance. The only option you have is self-publishing.
Yeah, and it really becomes more of a question of, should I chase after traditional publishing in the slim and unlikely hope that it will be published, or just get it done myself? And, you know, just as an aside to listeners who kind of are holding out hope that maybe someday, you know, Penguin and HarperCollins or whoever, the math even then is pretty dubious. If they're offering you a $2 million advance, it's because they know that your name and your story and your work can generate more than enough sales to justify that. And if you go and do it yourself, you're going to keep probably three times as much per copy in your pocket. So
I don't know.
However you slice the numbers, I don't think it adds up.
Well, Dan, I'll tell you what, I long for the day when I have this choice of, should I take the $2 million advance or should I try to make $6 million myself? You will be the first to know when I finish that.
I will wait for that email. But so listen, we can argue about the fringe case of the $2 million advance, but for just about everyone, present company included, you and me and everyone who's listening to this, self-publishing definitely seems to be the way to go in terms of the likely choice and the only viable choice. But yeah, so now we're down to the E in the APE, the entrepreneur, the third persona of this, you know, tripartite writer, publisher, entrepreneur character who has to take, you know, what started as a manuscript and was converted into, let's say, a Kindle book or, you know, a paperback available through CreateSpace on Amazon or whatever, and, you know, just keep it from being a digital listing on an online bookstore like Amazon and turn it into something that people are actually consuming and buying. And I can speak from experience, I think you'll agree, that this is actually where the most work has to happen and, you know, there's the most that can go wrong or be done right for that matter. So let's talk about that. You know, what happens in this magical E stage that turns, you know, bits and bytes on your hard drive or Amazon's hard drive into something that a lot of readers actually think of as a book?
So in this magical time when many authors believe all the great stuff happens, the bestsellerdom, the fame, the signings, you know, people standing in line to meet with you, this is the hardest time of publishing. Actually, I think for traditional publishing also, because, you know, writing is somewhat of a solitary thing. You know, you do it on your own at your own time, on your own schedule, at your own sort of pace. Publishing, if you're a traditional publisher, you basically give them a file and you pray. If you're a self-publisher, you're going to have to work hard, but it is a challenging process, but not a particularly daunting thing. I mean,
and there are right answers. You get it right or you get it wrong, and you can iterate
right,
towards
exactly.
Right.
Right. But in the entrepreneuring thing, that's where everybody's making it up on the fly. And so, you know, there are guerrilla marketing techniques. You have to get reviews. You have to get social media talking about it. You have to use email lists. There's just, you know, 50 ways to do these things. And some of which authors will find distasteful because they, you know, they think they're artistes and they don't want to be schlepping their product. And actually the part that I enjoy the most, because, you know, that's what I do. But for most authors, I think it's a rude awakening that, you know, oh my God, I have to sell my art? It's not just going to fly off the shelves?
Let's do this, because, I mean, honestly, you know, you and I could put on like a 7-day, you know, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day boot camp on everything that could be covered here, and we still wouldn't be through it all. So covering it on, like, you know, the minutes we have left on this podcast, it's just not going to happen. And we have another opportunity to give people a little more, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But maybe what we could do, because you have a pretty unique perspective. I mean, I could talk about, you know, how to market a book and, you know, how I marketed engagement from scratch, et cetera. But you have the very unique perspective of being a very long-time entrepreneur and a long-time best-selling published author through these big houses, as well as working independently. So what are some, you know, really interesting insights that, you know, someone like me just wouldn't know that you picked up from all this time doing all this in all these different contexts? What are a few things that, you know, just keeping them in mind would really hold our listeners in good stead? If they've got a manuscript, they've published it onto Kindle, and they're like, what can I do with this? No pressure, though, right?
Yeah, no. So this is something that most authors would never even think of. Those that do think of it would probably not try it. And in particular, those authors working with traditional publishers would not even be allowed to try. And I'm talking about crowdsourcing. And so in the process of writing Ape, I crowdsourced help 3 times. One was at the outline stage, where I asked 4 million of my closest friends to tell me what they thought of the outline of the book. A few months later, when the manuscript in my mind was quote-unquote done, I asked 4 million of my closest friends to copy edit and content edit the manuscript. And then after the manuscript was truly done and copy edited, I asked 4 million of my closest friends that if any of them wanted to review the book, I would send them the manuscript. So over the course of the process of writing the book, I solicited help from strangers all over the world 3 times. Roughly 1,200 people in some way, manner, or form came through, providing content, tips, providing copy editing, providing all this kind of stuff, okay? And so far, so good. You know, right there we could end the story and say, yeah, that was great, guys, very clever. Because I believe at any given point, there are a few people on the internet who know more than you about anything. So, you know, I may be discussing print on demand, and there are 5 people in the world, I guarantee you, at least 5 people, who know much more about print on demand than I do. So my job is to find those people, get the best possible explanation of print on demand, and I think you can use social media and crowdsourcing to do that. Okay, so we could stop the story right here and be happy, but this is the key. So Ape went for sale at midnight on December 10th, on 2012, and on December 9th at 7 p.m., i.e. 5 hours before it went on sale, I went to these 1,200 people via email and I said that Ape will be for sale officially in 5 hours, and Amazon does not let anybody post reviews until the book can actually be downloaded and bought. And if you think about it, that makes terrific sense, right? Because, you know, how can you review a book if Amazon truly isn't selling it yet? So I suggested and asked my 1,200 friends that it would be a great thing if there were reviews right away for my book. So beginning in 5 hours, you know, please go up there and review the book. And so I go to sleep, and the next morning I wake up, and there's about 40 five-star reviews. And so I got off to a very fast start. And then this is without cheating, you know, that none of those people were shills for me, fake identities. None of them were paid, and they had all read the book. So everything was totally legitimate. But I could not have gotten off to such a fast start had I not been paranoid and trusted about 1,200 people with basically my entire manuscript.
That's a fantastic example, and I think it's a fantastic segue to both wrapping up this call and kind of where we're going to go next, because, Guy, as you obviously know, but as our listeners are about to find out and should be very excited, We've got a very special webinar presentation coming up where you're going to share the APE framework in a little more detail, but then you're going to share how a lot of these ideas played out in real life with APE, and I'm going to jump in and share how a lot of these ideas played out in real life with Engagement from Scratch and with Naked Marketing, a book that's in progress and already kind of applying a lot of the things that you've just talked about, especially the crowdsourcing. And we're actually working on getting a third very special guest to join us. Hasn't signed off just yet, so I don't want to drop names. But it's going to be awesome. It's going to be exciting. And so everyone should really, really attend. Do you have anything you want to kind of add about, you know, how awesome it is before I tell people how they can sign up and make sure to be there?
I think I just want to explain that I really am trying to help people become successful at self-publishing. I don't want to give people the impression that this is one of those get rich quick, you know, you can sell a million ebooks in 6 months like I did, drive a Rolls Royce and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Self-publishing, any kind of publishing, any kind of writing is a challenging task. And so I want to temper people's enthusiasm. On the other hand, you're speaking to someone, or I am someone, who has published 12 books. So it's not like I'm this, you know, one-hit wonder. And it's not like I've just recently come to Jesus and discovered all these things. This has been a 25-year process. And in particular, a lot of the things that I've done are truly time-tested and acid-tested. Lots of people have these recommendations, sort of 25,000-foot level, about how to do things, you know. And I think a lot of people confuse strategies with tactics. And so my book is tactical. It's how to do something. It's, you know, step one, step two, step three. It's not strategic in the sense, let's take social media as an example. So many people say, well, the way you sell a book is you get on social media and you build a following. So that is a strategy. The tactic that I provide is, okay, so this is what has to be in your profile. This is what your profile picture should look like. This is how you comment. This is how you respond to comments. This is where you find content to post, and this is how to post it and what kind of picture to post with the content. And so to use, you know, sort of a military analogy, there are books that are written at the 50,000-foot level. There are 25,000-foot level. There are even 2,000-foot level. My book is written at the Navy SEAL knife-in-your-teeth level. You are feet-on-the-ground level. That's where I'm coming from.
And there's even more of that to look forward to on our live webinar. It's going to be happening on Thursday, April 18th, 3 p.m. Eastern. There is a registration link somewhere on the page where you are probably listening to this interview. If not, then browse over to Firepole Marketing. You'll find it there. If still not, then shoot me an email. We'll figure it out. On that note, Guy, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And I'm looking forward to the webinar, which is just around the corner.
Yeah, I have to say, I love webinars. I love podcasts. So I can't wait to do this. I love this medium. And for an author, a novice author, even an experienced author, this time we're living in where social media is fast, free, and ubiquitous, and you know, you can do Hangouts on air, you can do Skype, you can do GoToMeeting. You know, compare what we can do, Danny, to an author 20 years ago. What was he doing? You know, catching a propeller-driven plane, flying from Chicago to Indianapolis to New York to Princeton, New Jersey to Miami to Atlanta. Look at what we can do. It's a great time to be an author.
That about wraps things up for today. Many thanks to Danny and Guy. That was hugely valuable for anyone who's considering publishing their own work. To all of you listening, what do you think? Are you ready to self-publish, or would you stick with a more traditional publishing model? What was your biggest takeaway from this interview? Let us know in the comments, and please, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. As always, if you've got any ideas for a future podcast, you can send me a note at megan@firepolemarketing.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks with another podcast.